before I see it, I'm happy to share that with you.
Sure. Okay.
So here's our beginning, and I invite Lee Blasky from across the big pond to the interview for the Yoga Radicals book project. This is a set of curated stories from yoga innovators from around the world who have found the benefit of personal yoga practice and somehow have found ways to move their interest in the me quality of transformation to the we quality of transformation. And today Lee just shared with me two words that are set one on top of the other, and why one is illness, beginning with capital I or me, and then right under it was this longer, a little bit more explosive, interesting word called wellness. And so in this time of COVID adaptation, health becomes a very important concern. And I'm just going to say this for your benefit today, Lee. It was Monique Lawner out at Soul of Yoga in California who perfectly illustrated these prototyping ideas that these interview questions are based upon. And she said, well, but of course, now we need to all act like stars in each other's garden of wellness. And so this I and the illness and the we and the wellness and the moving from me to we, these universal precepts from the wisdom traditions are landing in our laps today, Lee. Mm. And so since I've had this long association with the Presencing Institute community at MIT, it's a large global community of change makers who employ not only a theoretical approach to mind, body, and planetary appreciation, moving from ego consciousness to eco consciousness. Mm-hmm. We've been really looking at what are the qualities of simply understanding what wants to happen next. And those were the embodiment practices that I used as I introduced these things to the group at IAYT. Now, what are we, almost, 2 years ago. So before I launch into the questions, just to remind you of the shape of this prototyping model, and it is in the shape of a star. I hold up my hand to share. And it comes from the research of the leaders who were looking at the internal state of themselves before they wish to offer any change or leadership to others, no matter what the context. And so these 5 points of the star begin with this capacity to just go out into the world and crystallize a vision, landing it in an intention or being given that divine spark. And then continuously listening to the universe, this quality of the universe being a helpful place, a source. And then launching with these linked intelligences of the head, the heart, and the mind, and the hand together, what is this reach toward a core team of people? How did those alignments invite some action? Confidence is the word we use at Presencing. And then where were the places and spaces where the launch pad began to arrive? And then how did you fail fast? How did you experiment? How did you design? How did you iterate or learn by doing? So those are the qualities of the carousel that we'll be playing in space-time together tonight, or in the morning where you are. And so that being the intro and context, Lee, now we can let all that go. And just simply come into our bodies in the space and time that we share on the planet ever more presently. And just feeling this big body earth that supports us. Sensing into that alignment with what is above and what is below. and inviting the spaciousness of the breath. And inviting in all the guides, angels, helpers, wisdom keepers, so that as you land in the project or projects that you'd like to embody, as you share your wisdom with us tonight, this morning, just notice what else wants to be revealed, what else wants to join. And if there's anything else that you'd like to add during our moment of sacred space, please let me know.
Simply namaste. For all that that means, the translation I love is, I honor that place in you where the entire universe resides, place of peace, of truth, of love and light. When you're in that place in you and I'm in that place in me, we are in the same place and we are one. And that's why I love the word and its intention.
Bravo. Fantastic. So this first question, Lee, relates to a sense of being initiated. As the invoking question for us tonight, this morning, the question is, how did this inspiration of yours arise? What were you thinking? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? And how do you know that it came from somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Wonderful question. And I like the fact you put it in the present rather than, well, what happened 50 something years ago when I started. And I guess a lot of it is, it's a continuing and probably evolving iteration of the understanding of the unqualified non-dual teachings, most notably Kashmir Shaivism, where there's a greater real feeling of these principles of non-separation and wholeness and even as we're talking, as you say, across the ditch and nighttime, morning time, but what does that really mean? I mean, I spend hours a week on Zoom with people in the United States and other places, and it's meaningless, these time differences. And ironically, that has helped cement in my heart those principles of non-separation. But as you were talking, and in your lovely centering, a big flashing word, love, came out of this time and time again. And I guess as part of being in Vanaprastha, that third stage of life in the Vedic tradition, where you step back from, you know, your normal business and family activities and other things, and you prepare for the, effectively preparing for sannyas, which most of us in the West don't do, but we either knowingly or unknowingly go into Vanaprastha. Well, I consciously did that from the end of 2017. There's more time, space, energy to allow these principles to percolate and to ferment. And it's almost a retrospective because it makes a whole lot of sense for what has gone in the past, what I did early days in starting yoga in the late 60s as a teenager, when all my friends were taking drugs and I didn't want to, and then sort of evolving into what I didn't know was yoga therapy in the early 80s, but I was doing yoga therapy because I had a massage background as well, a nutrition background. And so doing the yoga one-on-one, almost always one-on-one, seeing people with a therapeutic relationship. I look back now and see, well, okay, I was actually applying these principles of therapeutic relationship, of let's quote Rogers, you know, unconditional positive regard, and all those things. I didn't know about a lot of that stuff, but it was happening. It was just unfolding. And so now, in the present moment, as I feel into that, it makes sense how, for some reason, I'll come back to that question of the initiation aspect of it. I don't know how it actually is all initiated, but something did. And so I guess it was the unfathomable mystery that we might call that else, that other, which is here in the room, or in fact, we're probably in it, not the other way around. And of course, Kashmir Shaivism speaks of this a lot, of course, you know, that wonderful combination of Shiva Shakti energy and Spanda. And I've spent a lot of time exploring Spanda. I've just written about Spanda for Jessica Kingsley Publications for the new book on yoga therapy. And I'm guessing you'll probably have an early view of that before most people. And now I'm thinking, well, wow, I'm starting to understand by way of feeling what was just unfolding. And in fact, I've not actually thought about this now till you've asked this question. So this is brand new mentation that I was actually trusting unconsciously a lot more over the years in a natural unfolding, in a natural teaching, the natural whatever the God force is, you know, universal consciousness, we have our words, that was actually guiding all of this from the word go. And not that I, and occasionally I had stopped at that. I remember sitting in a place I was living a few years ago, 25 years ago, and I was teaching a meditation class. And I'd sort of look at the end of the class, I'd look at the window and say, how in the heck did that come through me? Like, how did I know the right thing to say? Because everyone said, oh, that was just right for us tonight. I don't know. It's just, it came through. And so I guess there was an innate trust, which is strange because I'm probably a trusting person, but I'm also a controlling person. I just like things to be in control and plan and, you know, put the ducks in a row. And yet I didn't do any of that. And I don't do any of that in my personal practice and in my teaching, which is interesting. I might do it in my personal life. So that's, I don't know if that answers the question. It was a bit of a wandering exploration, but please bring me into focus if it needs more focus.
I appreciate that this quality of the universal is here right at the beginning. From the perspective of this being a book to assess through the senses, Lee, as you were just so beautifully immersed in terms of your memory of the past, the present, and the future, from your basic grounding of your experience somewhere along the line already of the capacity to move from a I to a we. And you did that as you made choices. So what I heard from my listening practice is that you already had landed in the generative field, which is the more neutral language we use in leadership for that, in being informed by this speaking being, which is what we use in linguistics these days. And so if you are speaking your being and it was a flow through of the universal life force, as you mentioned, it might not have been an initiation. It might just have been something that came with you when you were born. So I just want to name that because that's the affirmative quality of having all of the parts, all of the alignments, all of the nadis all in here. We might just have to remember them or retrieve them from other lifetimes, right? That's what many of the wisdom traditions invite us to do in the advanced practices. So I'm just going to do the cartoon form of that awareness that I heard you landed. It's like the old cartoon strips that we don't even know that we know. So this resting in the unknowing is our beginning point, it feels like to me. And so now that we're just a day or two before the super moon and the Buddha's birthday, and you know, this springtime that we're having here amongst all the other states in the north, we're trying to understand how to get out of our heads. So that's really the part and parcel for the focus for the next question, okay? So if the assumption can safely be that what we try to know in these limited ways of words and readings these days have to actually be a clarification of something that comes through us individually, this next question is, if it's the sensing of being connected already that serves you in your practice, knowing that that's just one part of your identity, because we live these householder lives as well, then please tell the readers, where did the fuel of creating more energy for potential action in your life begin to flow through your personal practice? So as these awarenesses through your practices came in, all that you knew, remember, readers will be some younger ones who might have not quite understood the meaning of these rather transmittal experiences that we have, these transmission experiences. So think ahead for our reader and come back into clear language about that movement of your I to the we, or the me to the we. See if we can put some stepping stones along the way for that.
Sure. Okay, so the first thing I would say is, it's been a gradual educational process for me of getting out of the way. So, that's saying from the me to the we, getting the me out of the way so that I can attune to that greater field, if you like. And this is, to me, is the epitome of Svadhyaya in Ishvara Pranidhana. To me, Ishvara Pranidhana is an attunement. Yes, there's a surrender, but it's an attunement to this. You know, Ilan Vital, or whatever we, God, anything we like to name it. Now, to try and make it practical, as you say, for the younger readers. So in a teaching process, what I feel is really important, and I'll start from the teaching process and see if I can work that back to the personal practice. To me, it is being deeply present to allow resonance to occur, so that by momentarily, to the best of my abilities, which is, of course, always variable, to put I or me on hold and to be with that person, being to being, just sitting, talking, exploring, doing yoga therapy, teaching meditation, whatever it is, and I do most of it one-on-one, is being, just simply being. And when that, and in that being, that momentarily there's this recognition of sort of unlimitedness. It's like there's no limit to sense of space. There's this of time is a bit on hold. Nothing needs to be grasped for. It's like it seems just natural. Now I don't have to do anything. And then what happens is listening occurs, a greater listening. And this is a bit of an aside, so this is just like this is in brackets, but you may or may not want to have it somewhere. I believe one of the issues we have in yoga teaching and in yoga therapy sometimes is that practitioner is in their mind, person's coming along, I know something about what I want to teach today because it's this stage of the month or moon, or this person comes along with this condition, so I've learned these things from this condition. So their mind is already full of all the things that they want to put out to say, to talk, without starting from the place of listening, deep, deep listening, not just listening to the words, but the, you know, when I say listening, we know all the senses involved here, that, you know, physical presence, seeing, you know, I mean, and when you, I was probably something of a radical in yoga and yoga therapy when I started talking to people 40 years ago and I started to share things with my colleagues about ideomotor signaling. I said, what are you talking about? You'll know what's happening with your person. So sit there, look at them, and you ask him a question, they're seeing a little thumb twitches. Oh, they got a twitchy thumb. Maybe not. Ideomotor signaling. Anyway, and aside, take the brackets off. So, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the answer that you're seeking, I think, is how do we help yoga practitioners, meaning not just professionals, but people who are practicing yoga and the teachers and the therapists, to make that shift from something they feel to making that actionable in either their work or their personal practice? Is that?
Yes. So let me link a few of the keywords that interested me relative to your understanding, Lee. It had to do with the condition of being as one of the primary first order learning needs. Mm. And without going into all that that includes, and then in those one-on-ones, which is your particular area of expertise, at least that's what I hear you speaking about now, and then teaching in the larger group setting, what is it about listening at that level of being, both into the field between you and the other, and then having those capacities to sense, observe, co-sense, presence, whatever it is that's happening in whatever system, that you have the capacity to understand from that perspective of helping health or balance or something returned into that person's body. Mm. So the beingness of you, the shared listening into both the space and the person, what is it that you've understood over the course of your practice that you could land on by way of I practice, I do, I remember, I see, I feel? Real simple action statements, even imagining one person so that you could do it, you know, in memory from a context to dial it back so you could not have to think about it.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm thinking of a situation where it was actually in the yoga therapy training program, and we had case studies coming in. And a particular person presented, was going to come along and present with irritable bowel syndrome. And we'd spoken about digestive system earlier that weekend, and it was just, you know, we try and gear them to be a bit of a fit. And in sitting with that person, I wasn't in a hurry. I took time to develop relationship. And this is something that has been reiterated to me recently by reading quite a bit of Irving Yalom's work. If you know his work, but, you know, wonderful. I mean, he's a bit radical in his own field, of course, but it's important to take time to really get into that relationship. So that's the first thing. And in developing that relationship, what happens is you take some of your own internalized trust in process, in connection with the other, the higher, whatever. And you're modeling that trust that allows the client, let's call it the client at the moment, or student, to trust you enough as the practitioner to allow them to be trusting of themselves, to allow stuff to come out. So, trying to keep it simple. So I sat with this person, developed a relationship. How are you feeling today? And, you know, and I see you've mentioned you had something to do with your some irritable bowel syndrome. That's a whole lot of names. Let's pull that back and let's just look at how that feels in your body rather than giving it a diagnosis, because that's not our job. And he started talking about these things. And I said, well, perhaps when you're talking about it, can you bring your more senses involved in this? Put your hands where you're feeling it. And he put his hands on his belly. And then the back of his neck, and he had, oh, are you comfortable? I said, would you like it in a bit different position? Yes. What position do you feel would support you best? So he said, oh, semi-reclining. So he got some of the bolsters and semi-reclined him. And he softened, his whole body softened. He said, oh, I don't have to hold on, he said. I said, yeah, say more about that. And his hand, one hand went from the belly down to his groin. And I said, how are you feeling? And he said, I just realized this is not about the irritable bowel. He said, for years I've been hiding the fact that I had testicular cancer how many years ago. And I'm obviously still carrying stuff to deal with it, and we didn't actually delve too far into the whole history and what Levy just said. It's not an issue for me at the moment. There's no, you know, it seems to be cured medically. and then we sort of, then I said, well, okay, so as you're saying all of that, how does the body want to move? So I like to somatize things, because the mind, so many different colored glasses from rose to black, you know, and show me how the body wants to be. He rolled into a sort of a semi-fetal position and he sort of rocked a little bit. And I said, would you like to do a little, like a little chanting or meditation while you're here? Because I knew he liked chanting. Because he'd been a student in classes. Anyway, I said, yeah, that'd be nice. Like, I can't remember what chant we did at the time. He was doing as he's rocking, and he had a little cry, and he sat up, and he looked at me, and I've not seen an openness in this man's face before in my life. It still touches me. Just, he was, it's like everything had been ripped away from this guy. And I said, what do you feel like you need to take away now? Because this was, you know, it's probably an hour in the session. You know, because they're like sending someone away raw. That's very important too. That we don't send people away raw, but we can't type everything neatly with a bow at the end of a session. Doesn't always work. We've got to have resource them enough that they're okay. And he said, oh, you go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make you that moment of reflection about how you were feeling so much to him, as you are also simultaneously feeling into yourself.
Absolutely.
And that the memory you had of that enabled a new return or restoration of that very, very complete mind-body emotive state. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This non-dual state of the joy grief mm-hmm. that we have now on the yes. planet. Much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the dog barked.
Yes, yes, that's right. It's a dog barking now. I'm sorry if it doesn't upset. He's in another room completely, but he's a big dog with a loud voice.
No, the energy field, though, is active. So that's why I wanted to pause to make use of what was coming through, because I just want to make a distinction here. Instead of a location in a bricks and mortar type of thing, Lee, in this conversation, the places and spaces that I hear you landing in from our prototyping model is actually the shared field. We call it the social field. That is that dual, liminal, constantly reciprocal state. So I just want to put a little frame around that, because look what happens when that opens, even in this retrospective kind of conversation.
Yes, thank you for saying that, and it's true. And I like what you're saying. It's not a bricks and mortar thing, because at that moment, as I was saying it, and even now feeling back into it, it was just, again, it was just this beingness, even the recollection of it.
Yeah. Right. So I know you stopped when he was about to go away and you didn't want to send him away raw. So there was something else about tying it up that had some kind of feeling of an ending to it. So
yes, can you read? Yeah. And part of that, and you know, I've certainly taught this in the yoga therapy training programs, that when a client comes along, they come along with an expectation. And we obviously try and, you know, sort of, you want them to hang everything on that expectation. But they need to go away at least feeling that you haven't ignored their expectation. And so I wanted him to, so I'm not sure exact words I used, but it was to the effect of, you know, have we managed to sort of assist you with some things you were looking for today? It was a fairly standard sort of language you'd use. And you know, he had a little practice written down to help him with the semi-reclined position, how to use some things at home which he's got, and a little meditation that I made up afterwards for him that he could use, and a recording of the session, because we'd had permission to record the session. It was a cassette in those days. And I think a big part of what happened after he left, it was the relationship then with the yoga therapy students, which sort of continued that field, if you like. I think this is very powerful for those of who are reading this, who are involved in whether it be yoga teacher training or yoga therapy training, that training space is not just about learning about insertions and origins of muscles and you know, some where the feet go in certain asana, or you know, it's how long to suspend the breath. It's, you know, it really is about, as you say, understanding how to let go into and navigate that sort of liminal space of you know, the mind body field. Yeah, and that was very powerful. In fact, I can recall to that very end of that nearly 2 years that training program was, people still spoke about that session of you know, it was a shift for them.
Right. Beautiful. Thank you. So as the impact of that shared field experience traveled through time, it kept moving in people's awareness. They were remembering it in a different way than the other learnings that they were having. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about what they might have felt connected to as well, as we illustrate the impact of remaining in a non-dual state, not only in the individual setting, but now we're talking about how it endures and grows and branches out in the group setting.
So you, when you say they, you mean the students of the yoga therapy students in that session?
We have two characters here, the students, but also the client, your patient.
Right. Sure. For the client, the case study, I saw him a lot after that. In fact, we ended up connecting quite a lot more some years later. We were in a singing group together for 7 years. And it's like his whole, like a shell had been torn off him. And to me, it's his work, nothing I did. It was just, and he is a big believer in this whole idea of a you know, more generalized field. And he, I mean, he doesn't use the words non-dual philosophies, but he's, you know, he is of that mind generally. And he shifted, and he, even to the extent he wanted to start teaching yoga, about 6 months later, he said, I want to start teaching yoga. And I spoke to him about teacher training and other things, and he vacillated a little bit. And there was a shift for him in his family life where he became much more independent and appeared to be less codependent with both his wife and his kids. You know, I knew him pretty well. So and that's not immediate, but being with him, I felt I was able to still maintain at times that beingness with him that I hadn't had previously before that session. It was a little bit more staid. Now, he came from a fairly hardcore Germanic background and very matter of fact, and it was just remarkable, this change. And so in terms of the yoga therapy students, obviously we discussed it at the time, but it was not just discussing. We sat quietly before we discussed it. And I just said to them, to the effect of, I think I used the word holy space or sacred space. I just said, look, so-and-so is gone. Can we just sit and hold him together? And whether that holding him together was being part of his progress or not, yeah, possible. And they got it. I mean, people who study yoga therapy in our training program had to have many, many years of yoga practice background. So they were experienced practitioners. And there was, I think on following weeks, occasionally people refer back to it. And I would often say, let's just not look at it, the mechanics of it. Let's look at it as the relationship side of it. And can we keep remembering this is about relationship? So I'm not sure that directly answers the question.
No, yes, it's in the perspective of landing in this conversation with this cascading awareness that changes depending upon the nature of the focus, right? I invited you to dance around a little bit through a time-related question, but yet from a being-centered type of stage and state. So it's perfect. These are the learnings of the non-dual wisdom traditions.
Absolutely.
We move among and between all the time. You had something?
Because when you said to me before, keep it really simple for the newies and the young people, I had a wave of, not called anxiety in the big sense, it's small a anxiety, just like, oh my God, how am I going to, these are principles that I felt and come from years of immersion. Am I going to put this in black and white action? Help!
You did perfectly. You talked about the movements that you co-created in your observing of what he needed, and then this sitting quietly. So if at the base of it all, as we land in the body and breath and awareness, we're balancing stillness and movement. So the reflective capacity of how that operates through time so that it can be taught, learned, shared, we work from a presencing perspective that this creative flow begins through clarity of insight, right? When we begin to make distinctions among these different stages and states, so that we begin to learn to act from a different place of knowing. You know, the science on this is the embodied cognition, you know, that we have in the West. So as heart and mind and body, or even I'm imagining it now as this more adaptive social engagement system that Stephen Porges is talking about, that something else becomes more available in the human. And then that relational field that you so beautifully described and that I mentioned is probably your landing base for what it is that you've done as a yoga innovator, is somehow to lift up language around the importance of the being-based practices that enable this deeper sensing and seeing into the person who's in front of you or the group that's in front of you.
Yeah, and it invites that person in. And you mentioned Stephen Porges, that it hadn't occurred to me until just you mentioned it, that in a way there was a little bit of polyvagal theory coming into that work all that time.
So that's what I also want to add, that as we learn to have relationships with our own containers or nominalized ways of understanding and categorizing experience, we can also acknowledge the lived experience of the transmission that the wisdom tradition traditions provide for us through the sutras and the teachings. And so, since you've so beautifully, the word that comes is skipped between your person to the second person who you worked with, your clients, and then we talk about it as third person research, where we actually extend our interest and our attention into each of those separate relational fields. And from that collective creative resourcing, from the perspective of leadership development, we begin then to articulate more clearly what helps us sustain our practice so that we stay in the we consciousness, even when that old me keeps knocking at our ego. So that's more the question of what traditions or what teachings, what examples of major lifestyle changes that you made after embodying a new teaching or an experience, or even a crisis, something that you had to encounter, for instance.
Sure. Well, I guess my yoga journey started because of health crises and issues. So in a way, there's been regular visitors to just keep prompting the ongoing complex traumas that my poor body and therefore mind have had to face over, you know, 6.5 odd decades. Obviously the one that's most clear is most recent, though that does also stimulate me back to early days. But I mean, having had several episodes of being in hospital over the last 3 or 4 years in emergency rooms with heart issues. My issues are to do with heart rhythm, but I've had defects and my heart's swollen. And there's, I mean, it's been operated on too many times. And it's like it's, you know, poor thing's having a bit of a, it's like a 1950 Chevy pickup truck with rust all over. It's a good workhorse, but been hard done by. By recognizing that whatever is going on is not something that's being, it's not an attack, that this is happening within this broader beingness, if we can call it that, just existence itself, that a limited part of myself wants to fight against it. And then when I stop the fighting, and as I said before, getting out of the way, a perspective comes. And the perspective can be, well, this is just another set of symptoms. And yes, I can acknowledge there is some anxiety and fear. What does this mean? And, you know, obviously all the existential stuff and you know, mortality and those sorts of things. Of course, we're human, we're going to feel those things. But a perspective comes saying, well, if that's what is, am I going to go backwards and fight against it and lock down, or do I just keep open? Just say, well, and it hasn't been hard. It hasn't been easy. It's been very hard, I have to say. It's been a real challenge. It's been the focus of my personal practice, I guess, for the last 3 years is welcome this in. Welcome this in. What's it here to say? Welcome it in. Don't like welcome it? Too bad. Welcome it in. So welcoming is I guess, is the key feature at the moment. Preference for it not to be there? Sure. Welcome the preference, but at least welcome what is, because it is here and it might well be the next step, the next messenger. Now, if I think way, way back, in my first recalled experience of these traumas is at the age of 6, when I was in hospital for my first open heart surgery. I was the 40th person in Australia to have open heart surgery at the age of 6. And I don't recall trauma at that time. I recall things went on and they were just horrible events, injections and being in an oxygen tent and 3 weeks in a hospital as a kid, you know, and you felt like I was being dumped there. But being taken home by my, literally being carried across the main road from the hospital into a car by my father, very, very powerful image. And with that was a sense of, there is something whole here. There is something caring behind all of this that can be trusted. Now, it presented in the form of a father at that time, but in more, you know, of subsequent years, I explored that a little bit in my own thinking and occasionally with some therapy. You know, really, what was that? Was that my father always had a greater sense of trust and faith that is innate? Even though the mind is saying, I am afraid what's going to happen, an innate trust. And I guess that has enabled me to bring that trust further into the therapeutic relationship and teaching, and vice versa. They've supported each other. We, as we know, these things are always two-way. There's no one-way street. I'm not sure that I answered that question really well, but it was something that...
But let's hold the energy of this reciprocity, Lee, that's coming in as a very grounding theme in my listening to you, that reciprocity of knowing through your senses and then knowing through time, both with yourself, with your teaching, your experiences, but now to trace it back, that the faith and trust that you have had embodied as a young one, regardless of context, right? It happened to be a crisis context. And that there was a contact made, as you described it, happened to be my father. So let's explore that a little bit more, because as the transmutation process, the alchemical process of shifting the place of your knowing, right? No longer dependent on something, but having this quality of independence, kind of this spinning off into that other direction, that then beams back in to feed that original sense of human connection. So I just want to link it to what we talked about at the beginning. Remember the universe, it just is all one. So I'm getting yet another clear framing from your experience of the way in which your wisdom that was initiated back at six in your father's arms, being carried across the road, perhaps, into this other way of knowing that has been the, let's just call it the magic of your translation process into your teaching, into your thinking, into your speaking. So does that make sense? Can you follow how I put that together? And so if that crystallizing, that's the word we use when we move through these different states of awareness and embodied knowing, tell me now, if it shows up as new, we're wanting to bend into the future a little bit here, Lee, so that as you look back, and I, as you said, you were doing this more over the last 3 years, to see what are these patterns that have emerged in your translation process as you've moved from that me, worry, anxious state, whatever you want to call it, to this we acceptance that there's a trust in faithful contact that can be further investigated, staying open, as you say.
Okay, so and I guess it comes down to a couple of key yoga practices, Shraddha and tapas. Now my tapas is not of the austerity school. My tapas is of the clear and dedicated discipline and commitment to practice. And I'm in no doubt. There's not many things in this life that I have no doubt about. One is that I won't be sitting on this mortal soil in a number of years' time. And the other one is that it is the regularity of personal practice that has woven the magic of supporting the transformative and translating processes, translating unarticulatable experience into something that can be articulated. Then the question can be asked, how do we know what the practice needs to be? So here we have this catch 22. Through tapas, we develop more shraddha, you know, informed conviction. And through shraddha, we trust our practice will evolve more. So it's not a doggedness in relation to the practice. It's an aliveness to what's here now. Now, as a classic example, I have a morning practice that is just a short asana-based practice. It could be 15, 20 minutes most mornings. It's a limbering. It's like a pavamuttasana in a way. Lots of limbering for the old joints. And I do now do a little simple pranayama at the time for various things. And I might do some little chanting, but it's not a long practice for, it's maybe half an hour in the morning. In the afternoon, I'll do a nice long yoga nidra and I'll do some other stuff and hopefully live the life. And at other times, I'll weave things in. Now, that morning practice, whilst there's a routine, I lie still first and say, what is the impulse? What is the motive impulse? And that is the translation of the word spanda that I like. What is the motive impulse that's calling to be expressed here now? And this is something that underpins a beautiful practice that Richard Miller teaches, and he learned from his teacher, Jean Klein, called body sensing, which is it's basically tuning into what the feelings really are at the time and let those impulses move the body. And they may or may not take the shape of something we might recognize as an asana or a dance, as in tandava. So that's really how I translate all these things. If I didn't do my practice every day, and it's all parts of the practice. The practice is just living and living a yogic life. So it's my daily on the mat practice, might call it that, or an on the stool practice. It is my dedication to releasing the mental tensions through some form of psycho-emotional practice, yoga nidra of some sort, or sometimes just a deep relaxation, and connect and commitment every day to connection with. I'll just use the word nature, but you understand what I mean by that, something more than just the fact that it's a lovely rose bush out in the garden. It's like the deepest component of all of that. In fact, as we're talking, you'll see me looking up occasionally. That's because as I talk, I can't talk properly unless I connect with nature, because I've got windows all around me and I'm looking at eucalyptus trees and lavender bushes and other things every so often, because that helps me to ensure that I'm connecting with you. It is in a whole sense, not just going into the headspace, that I'm ensuring that I'm with the wholeness of nature. And think of yoga in a traditional sense. I mean, it's a very nature-based practice. It's like, go right back to its roots.
Exactly.
Does that help?
Lee, you've perfectly created a bubble of wisdom traditions that can be felt through not only your life story, but also the examples that you're able to pull out of the universe. So from an interviewer's perspective, it was very, very enjoyable from learning that your comfort between these time zones, these comings and goings that you've dealt with for so long, is a very instructive place for people to listen into. Because at this moment, we do not know, right? And to stay in the knowing, and then to make decisions, your tapas, your spanda. The spanda concept is very critical to this whole process. You picked that up.
Yeah. Yep. As soon as you did the intro, I thought, oh, wonderful, spanda.
Okay. We're there, my friend. You're taking
fantastic. Oh, that was great. Look, I really appreciate that. It's been a wonderful exercise, and I feel like I've had a nice little therapy session as well. That was beautiful.
bless you all.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you. All the best. Bye.